There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Here we go. FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile on this Friday. And what a beautiful Friday it is. And a beautiful weekend ahead of us as well. Silver lining to the very gray cloud that was Hurricane Michael that has wrecked so many lives to our east and to our northeast. We'll talk about that in just a second. Good news is for us along the Gulf Coast, weekend is fantastic. Heading for a high today around 82, still in the 70s now. A little warmer by tomorrow and Sunday. High in the 80s, but still that dry air sticking around through at least the early part of next week. 87 for the high on Sunday, 84 for the high tomorrow. Shrimp Festival is kicked off. That's rolling. Of course, you've got the Dolphin Island Art Trail. That's tomorrow as well. So a lot of activities on the coast to get out and do. And a lot of people just getting out and enjoying, you know, some non-sweating weather, working in the yard, working around the house. I get it. It's going to be good stuff. Dr. Bill will give us more on our forecast coming up in just a little bit. Still recovery, search and rescue efforts, actually. Let's talk about that. Search and rescue efforts are what's going on in the Florida Panhandle. As search and rescue teams are there, as are line crews trying to get power back on. But even before they can, you have crews trying to clear the roads. And some of the pictures I put up on the Twitter feed earlier today, you can see roads that are just not even like the ground zero areas like Mexico Beach, where it is just a pile of house rubble. Of course, Mexico Beach, being there on the beach, the front sections there, not a whole bunch of trees. So what you're looking at there is just the streets full of rubble from the homes. But back in Panama City and elsewhere, you see it's very reminiscent of what it's looked like here after like a Hurricane Frederick, or even to our west with Hurricane Katrina, with so many pine trees snapped and down in those streets, and they're still working through there. I know that we have a couple different efforts going on right now already with groups from here taking supplies over to the Florida Panhandle. And as more of that information comes in, we're going to put that all together in a list. And we'll have that through our social media platforms. I know that the what we had talked about this morning, Cecil had called us and said they were taking a load of water and easy-to-cook foods, and also canned goods, snacks, those kind of things, and water. They already picked up and left. They came through with the truck and filled it up, and they are already on the way, as of about an hour and a half ago, over to Panama City. So that's good. Cecil, well done. We will keep, next time they go and make a run over there, we will let you know so you can stop by and drop off supplies for those folks. Also, people saying, yeah, hearing back from Alabama Power folks working over there. Okay, good. Yeah, we've got Alabama Resources working there. I think, Baldwin EMC working up in the Dothan area. I'll get to that in a second because that's another part of this story. And not just the damage that's been done there in the city of Dothan. And I got to tell you, I did not know, and that, shame on me, that Dothan had a garden district. It said big damage in Dothan's garden district. Also, elsewhere in Houston County, Dothan officials are saying they're working, trying to restore electricity, still clearing roads up there. So a lot of trees down around Dothan. This from a story from Lita Gore over at AL.com said storm damage in Alabama's Wiregrass area did not approach the devastation in Florida, but the hurricane did cause widespread problems, including downed trees and power lines and damaged homes. Parts of southeast Houston County, closest to the path of the hurricane, saw the most extensive damage. And I'm looking at some pictures coming in here. A lot of trees down there. Said Dothan Fire Chief Larry Williams said rescue teams from Birmingham, Hoover, and the Alabama Fire College helped with the search of damaged houses today. They said all residents were accounted for and no injuries have come to light, so that's good. They said there were some minor injuries and one serious injury caused by a fallen tree at one home on Wednesday. Director of Public Works in Dothan, Charles Metzger, said still hundreds of trees down, but the major roads, and this is as of today now, Major roads have been cleared. He expects secondary roads to be cleared by the middle of next week. Now, y'all, this isn't down on the coast. This is up in Dothan. Billy Mays, Director of Public Utilities, said 18,000 electrical customers remain without power there in Houston County, down from 24,000 on Wednesday night. Houston County Commission Commissioner Mark Culver said the office buildings are still without power and probably won't be operational until next week. And then the other part of the story, and I saw some pictures here that Todd Stacey from the Alabama Daily News, who will be on the show with us from time to time, he posted up some as well as he was traveling with Governor Ivey. Governor Ivey touring the damage in Alabama from Hurricane Michael. And you should see see the lack thereof of cotton in some of these fields. Of course, that part of the state of Alabama, just like Baldwin County, growing a lot of cotton. And there's some areas, now I don't know if it's the entire Houston County, I don't know how far reaching it is, because I'm just looking at it through pictures, but the plants are completely denuded of their cotton crop. This is a big deal, a real big deal. I mean, right now, October, this is when farmers are pulling cotton out. They've been waiting all summer. This has been, all waiting for October to do this, and let alone from having a lot of rain and getting wet fields. They also have the situation where they lose so much of their crop. And like I said, these pictures I'm seeing cotton field after cotton field there's no white from the cotton. There's no bolls on the plants that I can see. And some of the video here is showing the same thing. So they've lost in some areas. Once again, I don't know how wide-ranging this is, but I'll post this up. You can see the video and see the pictures. And I mean, there's just not any cotton anywhere in them. I mean, there may be a bowl here or there, but their entire harvest for cotton farmers is gone. So that's bad news there. And yeah, Governor Ivey doing that tour. And this actually put out from, I think, the governor's office here. I said the Category 4 hurricane sustained winds 155 miles an hour, landed in Mexico Beach, and then it says rolled through a farm 70 miles from the coast. This one farmer here, they have in the story, Fred Helms, said the cotton would have picked 1,000 pounds an acre before, it might pick 350 pounds now. So think about what those farmers are dealing with going forward. Wow. All right, 1213 FM Talk 106.5. So, I mean, the story of the aftermath of Hurricane Michael is on many, many levels. There will be, of course, the big question of how many people that are missing right now. And you've seen the news accounts that, for example, Mexico Beach said 230 people stayed during the storm. And they have not accounted for all those people. Still looking for people there. So search and rescue going on there. And, of course, recovery and starting anew for so many down there with their homes and businesses. That's one part of it. And then even up here in Alabama, you look at the damage done from trees down in southeast Alabama. But how about that? The other wrinkle, Alabama farmers losing a huge amount of their cotton crop. So very, very sad news as of today. All right, coming back, we will talk to Brendan Kirby. He's going to join us in just a little bit. I do want to check in with my buddy Angelo at Mobile Bay Coins to catch up with what's happening on a gorgeous Friday. Hey, Angelo.
Hey, how's it going, Sean?
Good, man. What's up?
It's been crazy busy here. I know, it was very slow there for a day or two with all the weather excitement that was going on, but man, we dodged a bullet with that one.
Yeah, absolutely. You look at the intensity of Michael over there where it hit at Mexico Beach, and now we're seeing also the damage over by Dothan as well. Yeah, we are definitely lucky that it was to the east of us. So people are getting kind of back in the swing of things, getting normal here, and y'all are back to your normal busy state?
Yeah, we certainly are. As a matter of fact, we've had a lot of new silver items come in and a lot of new knives come in, like we talked about. Unfortunately, every one of those new cool knives, sort of the staff pick or team picks, those have actually all sold out. So all we're left with are all those cool open L's, which that's not a problem.
Those either. Are the ones I love. Amazing. Those open L's are the ones I love. Tell folks, I mean, I've told them in the past why I like these, but describe what makes an open L knife unique.
Well, something very cool about the open L is it's a classic design. The company has been around since 1890, so this is not a new fly-by-night company. The knives are still made at their factory in France. So this is not, again, something made over in the Asian market out of low-grade products and then shipped over here. These things feel good in your hand. They look great. They said that there's actually a museum over in Europe with classic designs, and that knife is sitting right next to the Porsche as far as the style and design of these things. Just got to come by and check it out. They're not expensive. You know, the number 8 starts out at around $12. They have kitchen knives. They have the the standard pocket knives, so many different options. I mean, we could talk for a whole hour just about open house, my friend.
Yeah, they are really cool. Y'all, I mean, when you go look at them, too, you'll see, for those of us who like a lockback knife, it is a lock, but it's not a lockback. The locking mechanism is different than anything you've ever seen, but it's really, really solid. I've owned these for years now, and I put some serious use in my knives, and these things, I know Angelo's a collector. I'm the utilitarian guy, and they stand up to the use for sure.
They really do. The only thing I would say is don't do as one of our friends has done, and if you've got the wooden-handled one, don't run it through the washing machine in your pocket. Wood and washing machines don't work quite so well.
That should be printed somewhere there at the store. Before you buy this, make sure not to put it through the washing machine. All right, let's talk about also precious metals. Somebody wants to come by and take a look. What do you think? How's silver looking and how's gold looking?
Silver and gold are both starting to creep up a little bit, but we've been keeping ahead of the curve as far as keeping good inventory in stock. So if you want to come by and look at a really nice $20 gold piece, you want to look at some silver American Eagles, or some of those cool products we always talk about with the Queen's Beast series and the Wild West series, I've got plenty of all of those items in stock and ready to go.
All right, Angelo, appreciate it. Give people directions to come see you in person or in the digital world.
Yeah, in the real world, we're in Midtown, 2204 Government Street. And in the digital world, the best place to find us is go onto Facebook and like and follow Mobile Bay Coins there. You'll be sure to see some cool pictures of the stuff we're talking about.
Hey, thank you, man.
Have a good one, Sean.
You too. Angelo, check it in for Mobile Bay Coins, and we're coming right back. I do want to add this to the list, too. As I told you, things are happening right now. Things will probably be happening next week, too, with relief for the folks over in the Florida Panhandle. Got a note here that some folks I know, we'll put it that way, I don't even out their names, folks I know, people you can trust, have a trailer parked there at Nexus Cinema Dining on Bruns Drive, 7070 Bruns Drive. They're going to be loading that trailer with donated items tomorrow and Sunday. They're at Nexus Cinema. They're going to load that baby up and take it to the Florida Panhandle. More details, we'll link it through on the Facebook page. Coming right back, Brendan Kirby joins us next.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
At 12:21, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile on this gorgeous Friday. Man, is this not fantastic? Get out and hopefully you get a chance to enjoy Dolphin Island Art Trail. Maybe you want to do the Shrimp Festival. Maybe you get out and do a little fishing, work in the yard, or if you have a chance to take part in one of these efforts to help out the folks in the Florida Panhandle, do that as well. All right, I mentioned our buddy Brendan Kirby from LifeSet.com, also the author of Wicked Mobile, was joining us, and voila, there he is. Hey, man.
Hey, how you doing, Charles?
You were going to pause for a second to try to make it like, no, I'm not. let's talk about, first of all, let's talk about Wicked Mobile. People who are way more ahead of the game than I may be thinking about doing some Christmas shopping. And if you want to get something maybe for family members that moved away from Mobile, or, you know, give them something to their roots here, or somebody's really into their city, this might be a pretty good Christmas gift.
Yeah, it could certainly be a good Christmas gift. I know people in past seasons have bought it for, you know, their father or their uncle or something that's a real big local history buff, and they seem to enjoy it. You can pick it up in local bookstores. You can order it online. Of course, if you go to Amazon, you can read the review someone left that said, this guy appears on local radio a lot and sells his book, but it's just not that good. but you know, I mean, it's to each his own.
Hey, it's listen, there's a reason people are buying so many of them. It is a good read. Also, talking about what you're writing, and a pretty heavy story you have up at LifeZet.com right now, and this is one that kind of goes into discussions that we had all through the Kavanaugh confirmation. And, you know, what was the, you saw the fight, but what was the fight really about? And it was a change of the tenor of the Supreme Court going forward, obviously a young conservative justice going on. And the secondary question was not just in general, but specific, you heard it actually during confirmation proceedings, standings on Roe versus Wade opinion of then judge, now justice, Brett Kavanaugh. And but I asked you back then, I said, well, it's, you could only have the Supreme Court weigh in on something if a case makes its way in front of the Supreme Court that they will hear. You know, what kind of case makes its way up? And you have a story up at LifeSet that said, here's the abortion case that could overturn Roe versus Wade.
Correct. Yeah, justices can't just decide to throw out laws that they think are unconstitutional or don't like. They need an actual dispute to consider. And you're right, by the way, with your setup. This Kavanaugh hearings before the sexual assault allegations came forward, this was all 100% about Roe versus Wade. And if you ask the typical progressive voter citizen, what is the case that you are most concerned that the court will overrule if Kavanaugh gets on the court, they will all say Roe versus Wade. And when you ask them, what is the second case that you're most concerned that they will overturn, you'll get a blank stare.
Right. I mean, it's all...
very few people would be able to name any other precedent, you know, that they're afraid would be overturned. So this is to large measure about Roe. And it just so happens there's an Alabama connection to this. There is a case from Alabama that potentially could serve as the basis for overturning Roe versus Wade.
Okay, and that's the point, because so people understand this process, because Roe versus Wade is, as some people have said in quotes here, settled law. You couldn't just bring a case. I mean, you wouldn't just have a state ban abortion and then have that case. It's not going to work that way. It's going to be nuanced, and this case at Alabama
happen. If a state decided, you know, we're now's the time we're really going to do it. You could have a state legislature that would pass a law that outlawed all abortions for any reason.
Yeah, but what are the odds?
You know, that would be struck down, and then that potentially could be appealed. This one is a little more nuanced, as you mentioned. It was a law that Alabama passed in 2016, and it involves a late-term abortion procedure that the state calls dismemberment abortion, and that the clinical term is dilation and extraction, and it's a particularly gruesome method that is done, because at that point the fetus is too large and well developed, to use other abortion methods. So it involves, and I don't want to get too gruesome, but it involves breaking apart the unborn baby and then suctioning out the parts. So it's a gruesome procedure. It was struck down because the federal judge in Montgomery who heard the case determined that there was no other viable alternative to this kind of abortion, because the partial birth abortion was already outlawed, and other methods that the state had put forward, he said, were not feasible because they weren't 100% effective, or it was too costly, and these are low-income women. There were various reasons. So he struck it down, and then it went up to the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals in Atlanta, and they ruled in August, 3-0 decision, affirming the lower court's opinion, saying, look, the Supreme Court precedent is clear on this. You can't do this. But then it was interesting because they sort of went out of their way to practically beg the Supreme Court to take this case. They talked about how dismemberment abortion is the more accurate term, and that they questioned whether Roe versus Wade is sound constitutional law. They suggested it could be an abortion. So all this language in there questioning the constitutional basis for all this. But then they said, look, we're lower court judges. We don't have the power to correct an error by the Supreme Court. That can only be done by the Supreme Court.
Well, okay, but you have this, and just kind of getting in the details here, how this works so people understand. So you have this case, it goes to the 11th Circuit, comes back. Now you have to appeal, right? And that's something...
In order to get it to the court, the state is going to have to appeal. And I think they have 90 days from the August 22nd ruling to make that decision. So the state could just decide, you know what, you know, we're going to leave it here. They could ask for what they call an en banc hearing, which is not just a 3-judge panel, but all the judges of the circuit court. Sometimes they take that step. They could bypass that and ask the Supreme Court to take it up directly. And then it would go to within the next month or so, they decided they were going to appeal, it would go to the Supreme Court. And then it would be up to the justices to decide whether to take the case. And this is where Judge Kavanaugh, now Justice Kavanaugh, could play a deciding role. It takes 4 justices to hear a case. And if it doesn't get 4 votes, then they don't take the case and the lower court ruling stands. And that is the final outcome of something like 99.5% of all appeals in the Supreme Court. They usually don't take them. So it could be, if Justice Kavanaugh is as eager to overturn Roe as frankly many of his supporters and opponents think, then he and three other conservative justices could decide, you know, we're going to take this appeal. And then, you know, they would brief it and they would have oral arguments and you'd have the potential that they could overturn Roe versus Wade.
But there are, you know, it's not like, I mean, there are some steps ahead of it for it to happen. And let me ask you this, too, your sense of other conservative justices, will they be wanting to see that case?
Yeah, well, I mean, Clarence Thomas, I think, would. I mean, he is on record.
There's two, okay.
He's already voted against upholding Roe versus Wade in the past. And it's kind of interesting because in that opinion I was talking about in the appeals court, Joel Dubina, who is one of the appeals court judges and is also the father of Representative Martha Roby from Montgomery, he wrote a separate opinion that was only a page, and he wanted to emphasize the point that he thinks Roe versus Wade is bad law, and he quotes from dissents that Justice Thomas has written on abortion cases, making that very point. So he was very much into that as well. Now, I should point out the third judge who heard the panel is an Obama appointee, and she wrote a concurrence that was all of six words long, which was, "I concur in the judgment only." So she wanted to make clear, the result is right here. The lower court ruling should be upheld, but I'm not going along with any of this business, you know, challenging Roe. The procedure is the state would have to appeal, and then the court would have to take it. But it could, I mean, if they wanted to, it could happen fast, because they could take it and hear it later this current term.
Wow, we're coming right back. More with Brendan Kirby. We'll talk about this and a whole lot more. It is Midday Mobile. Let's check news.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
At 12:35, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile Friday style. And hey, by the way, another great event tonight, Cottage Hill Package. Plantation Rum is coming to Cottage Hill Package tonight for this tasting at 6. Award-winning distillery is going to be there with their premium rum lineup for you to sample. Also, reps on hand, which usually means swag goodies from the distillery or the brewery. Depends on who's there and what they got, right? But in this case, the distillery, they'll be giving samples of their 3-star light rum, their original dark, their Stiggins pineapple rum, their overproof 69%, their 5-year age rum, their 20th anniversary, and some other surprises as well. Starts at 6 o'clock tonight. Another free event at Cottage Hill Package, right there in the lounge in the back of Cottage Hill Package. And when you're there, sample some of this rum. If you like a bottle, you get and go can buy one there in the store. Also, you know, the craft beers, 2,000 different craft beers to choose from. Same number of cigar labels for you to check out. Also, while you're there, find wines, spirits, and just a great advice. If you have, if you like this craft beer, you know, there's people there, you go, "I like this craft beer." They can say, "Well, have you tried this one or this other one?" And they can kind of link things together and put them through. Hey, get more information when you follow them on Facebook, Cottage Hill Package, or just check out the website, cottagehillpackage.com. All right, continue our conversation with Brendan Kirby from LifeSet.com, also the author of Wicked Mobile, talking about a couple different things. Number one, this abortion case that could overturn Roe versus Wade. And you kind of were walking us through the steps of what it would take for this to make it to the Supreme Court. I mean, it's not a, but then you said it could happen fast, right? So yes and no in this.
Yeah, well, I mean, again, the state would have to decide to appeal, and I gotta think the state would appeal.
What's Steve Marshall say? Did you get a quote from Steve Marshall?
Yeah, the quote was, "We're not commenting. It's under review."
Okay.
But I'd be surprised. It doesn't really cost the state anything to appeal. Basically, just the filing fee and the staff time of the appellate lawyers there. You take a shot at it. But yeah, if they appeal, the justices regularly meet and they have these conferences where they consider appeals that come their way, decide whether they want to hear it. So if the state appealed quickly and the justices decided they wanted to hear it, they could put it on the calendar for early next year. And you could have a decision by the summer. I mean, it's possible. Now, I would just caution you to temper expectations. One, even if they did take it, it doesn't mean that they would strike down Roe, they could just affirm the lower court decision, or they could strike some sort of middle ground where they say, you know, we're leaving Roe in place, we're not overturning that, but we're going to say that if a state wants to ban a specific kind of procedure, you can do that, and they could sort of chip away at the more restrictions.
Right, that's the people have talked about that before, the backdoor undoing of Roe, right? Saying, well, we're not going to change this set of law, Roe versus Wade, but you can't use these different methods here. And so Roe would stand, but the methods used would be struck down, right?
Right. And the supporters of abortion say that it would effectively be a ban on all late-term abortions if you did this because there's not a viable alternative. So, if the justices didn't want to overturn Roe, this would actually be a good case to take if they wanted to stake out some middle ground, because if a state, passed an outright blanket ban and you took that case, it's limited what you can do. You either say that's okay or not, and if you say it's okay, then you're overturning Roe. So that's a possibility. Now, I I've talked to a bunch of experts, and my own feeling tends to be, I think it would be unlikely that the court is going to wade into abortion, especially this soon after Kavanaugh got confirmed, in very contentious circumstances. And John Roberts, the Chief Justice, is very cautious, and he worries a lot about the institutional legitimacy of the court. To me, to be a surprise, if they took this kind of action. But as was pointed out in the story, just last term, they struck down a precedent that was almost as old as Roe versus Wade and ruled that non-union members don't have to pay agency fees to unions that negotiate collective bargaining contracts. So, it's not like the court never overturns precedent.
All right. I want to switch to a couple different things here. First of all, we'll go with this. A question for the text line. David said, hey, can you ask Brendan if there's ever been a time in modern history where the party of the sitting president has lost seats in the House but gained seats in the Senate? And, of course, we're referring to upcoming, midterms, and in the midterms, the common wisdom, which is not always true, but most of the time true, that the party in power in the White House, that party loses in the Congress. But he's asking specifically, I guess, different bodies here, has there been a situation where they lost the party in power in the White House, loses seats in the House but gained seats in the Senate? Because that's kind of, you hear people talking about that right now.
Yeah, and that has happened. Off the top of my head, I can't think of the last time that it has, but if you say modern times, like post-World War II, if we're counting that as modern times, yeah, there have been elections where a party has lost seats in the House, but gained in the Senate or vice versa. It's not all that common because it usually flows in one direction, but you've had situations where it hasn't, and it's usually dependent on a situation like this where the national environment is bad for the party in power in the White House, so that's going to affect House seats. But because the whole Senate is not up for re-election at one time, it's only a third of them, depending on how that shakes out and the seats that happen to be up, it could be favorable for the party in power, which is the case here. These Senate seats are being played out mainly in red states where Democrats hold them. So that gives the Republicans a much better shot at the Senate, even if the national environment isn't great, because it's not uniformly bad. It's very bad for Republicans in cities and suburbs right now. But the national environment in more rural places is not that bad for Republicans. And you get a state like North Dakota that's mainly rural, the Republicans, I think at this point, are favored to pick up that seat. And there's a bunch of others where they legitimately could win. So, yeah, it has happened, but not a lot.
How's that play made? I mean, you would think you want to keep control of the House because obviously for spending bills and a whole bunch more, but could have control of the Senate, I mean, even as big a majority as could come out, let's say the Democrats won really big in the House, had control, and Nancy Pelosi, or that's a whole other story, is back in charge in the House. A Republican Senate, though, how could that be used by the president to thwart efforts from the House?
Well, if I had to pick, if I were, a strategist in the White House and I had to pick which house to lose, I would pick the House.
You would.
Better, to keep. Yeah, and the reason is.
And some people have disagreed this week. We've talked about that. That's interesting because some people said, you got to keep the House and you can lose the Senate.
I mean, look at it this way. The Republicans have the House now and have passed a whole bunch of stuff, lots and lots of stuff, and very little of it has gotten through the Senate, even though they control the Senate, because the Democrats have been able to knock it down. So there's been no funding for the wall, spending reforms have gone nowhere, a bunch of immigration stuff, lots and lots of, there's a lot, you asked Bradley Byrne how many bills the House has passed.
Oh, yeah.
Well, turn that around, the Democrats, if they get control of the House, will be able to pass all kinds of, they will be able to pass Medicare for all, and all their left-wing ideas, but that's not going to go anywhere in the Senate. So none of, and if it, even if it did get through the Senate, it would be vetoed by Trump. So
right.
None of that stuff would become law. The reason I say the Senate is more advantageous to have is because Chuck Schumer is going to be able to block the Republican agenda as the majority leader or the minority leader.
Yep.
So that, that makes the House kind of meaningless. But keeping control of the Senate means you keep control of the. Of the machinery that confirms officials, and particularly the courts. And you talk about how important the Supreme Court seat was. If Chuck Schumer gets to be the majority leader, he will shut that down, and we won't see any appellate judges probably go through, or very few. As long as Mitch McConnell keeps the gavel, they're going to be able to get these people confirmed, and they're going to be able to go through, and the House has no effect on that. So I would say, for the purposes of right now, if you had to choose, you'd want to keep the Senate.
All right, coming right back, more with Brendan Kirby with Mindset.com. We're going to talk about, yes, we are. We'll go Kanye when we come back. Or, as I've now heard, is it three people today? Call him Conway West, which, by the way, I think is room for a country artist to come out, kind of a country rap mashup, Conway West, but yeah, Kanye West. Visits with the president, and then all hits the fan.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
All right. By the way, this breaking news right now, I guess. It's news. I don't know about the breaking news. I don't have any sounders. I just saw it pop up. Kim Jong-un intends to get rid of all the rogue states' nuclear weapons, according to an agreement at a summit today. Okay. I like the sound of that, I appreciate the efforts of President Trump and Pompeo. I'll believe it when I see it. Sorry for my cynicism. That's the headline. Kim Jong-un says he's going to get rid of all their nukes, and he signed the agreement. So, what did Reagan say? Trust but verify, Brendan, right?
Yeah, is there a sound? Do you have a sound effect in the radio studio for skepticism?
Yes. It would be the sound of my voice. That's skepticism. Fine. There's the headline. I'm going to report the headline. And this is, I'm not trying to take away from U.S. efforts to do this. I do not trust anything that comes out of North Korea. I can't, man. I can't.
Yeah, they've not exactly been transparent or truthful in past years.
Brendan with the understatement of the week. Want to get to some talk about Kanye West, or as I've heard him talked about on different radio shows and cable news shows, Conway West, which is which, by the way, if you're a budding artist out there, want to kind of mix up some rap sounds and some country music sounds, I know other people have done it too. That's like the whole genre, but do it differently and call yourself Conway West. But yeah, Kanye West met with President Trump, and he wasn't the only one. We talked about it. Kanye West was there, but he was not the only. I mean, Kid Rock was there, and the people from the recording industry were there. It wasn't just like a one-on-one meeting. It was about something more, but my gosh, has it turned into a storm around this.
Yeah, definitely, and I'll get into that, but just because I like to do a service to your listeners, I did a little research over the break. And Bill Clinton's second term, if you remember, Democrats picked up House seats, but that year the Senate was flat. It didn't go. It was a zero gain or loss. Same thing happened for Ronald Reagan in 1982, when the Republicans lost a bunch of seats in the House. But the Senate was flat. And then you also had. You got to go back to Richard Nixon, the last time the Republicans gained seats in the House in 1970, but they lost seats in the House. So it in the Senate. So it happens, but not much. But yeah, so back on the Kanye, I don't know. I mean, I've been surprised by the intensity of the opinions on this, because to me, you know, the president met with a celebrity, so what? Doesn't that happen all the time?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and what you said, you know, you said your story. I mean, you said you're talking about the expressions of outrage or excitement over on both sides of this, and it's I mean, it's become such a big thing.
You know, the just the intensity. This has become such a big thing, not only on cable news, but you know, my Facebook friends posting a lot of stuff about it. And Don Lemon on CNN, God bless him, went into this just tirade yesterday, calling it a minstrel show. And to me, it's just it's strange, because it's, you know, it's not like this is the first time a celebrity has ever voiced a political opinion and had it being treated as treated seriously by people in the media and politicians. This happens all the time. Obama was Mitt Romney made was it John McCain that made a commercial about him during the campaign about being a celebrity figure and meeting with celebrity. I mean, this is not new in American politics, and everyone is aghast that Kanye West got to come to the White House.
Yeah, it's, and I don't know. It's, you're right. It's on both sides. To say that, you know, it's a frustration I have where people sign up to be the spokesperson for black people or the spokesperson for white people, and that person's there, or, you know, even when somebody doesn't sign up. And just goes, and they'll say, well, that means, all the white people think this, and all the black people think this. And you should hear my eyes rolling in my head when I see that. I'm like, how about that there are individuals that believe, you know, this idea that he's there representing all black people, and so this is unacceptable.
Yeah, I mean, he's there talking about, some issues that he cares about. And, look, Kanye West is a little strange. I get that. And, I think
he's wealthy. He's wealthy. He's wealthy.
From Brendan. Taylor Swift. And I thought that was rude and outrageous behavior. And I still think that's rude and outrageous behavior. I haven't changed my mind just because Taylor Swift has, endorsed the Democratic candidate in Tennessee and Kanye is wearing a MAGA hat. But at the same time, I mean, if, Trump wants to hear him. I mean, look, a commentator on CNN was complaining yesterday that, he's just a celebrity and he's there to talk about these issues like urban renewal and criminal justice reform, but he's not a policy expert. You know, why wouldn't Trump want to talk to people who actually, are experts in the policy? And I'm like, what? I read a story looking at the long list of celebrities who have testified before congressional committees about things that they have no particular expertise in, including Stephen Colbert, who in 2010 testified in character from his Comedy Central show at the House Judiciary Committee, and Nancy Pelosi at the time thought it was wonderful, it was great.
Oh, Elmo. Of course, it's great.
They don't even have to be human. Elmo testified one time before Congress. So this idea that celebrities can't speak out on politics and people in the government only hear from subject matter experts, this is a brand new standard that was just made up 24 hours ago.
It changes, yeah. It's whatever. And by the way, I just wanted to interject that you said Kanye West was a little different or strange. If you have his kind of money, the term is eccentric. You understand that, right? That's where, okay, when you do that and you have money, you're not, nobody's going to say he's strange or weird. You'll say he's eccentric. That's what happens when you start getting, zero, 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 zero behind your name. You become eccentric. Well, I mean, this is just the latest, like you said, it's dominating a bunch of social media discussions. And I don't know how it moves the needle. It seems like just another proxy war or some way to, I don't know. I mean, instead of attacking policy, right, it's attacking people and relationships and who President Trump talks to or doesn't talk. If he didn't talk to somebody, then that would be a problem, too.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's just, it's a strange thing. And I heard a lot of liberals complaining that, that Kanye West sullied the Oval Office because he dropped the F-bomb, you know, in the Oval Office. Now, I don't support cursing in the Oval Office.
Well, I'm not happy about not being able to take a feed.
Is that the worst thing that's happened in the Oval Office in my lifetime? I'm thinking not.
No, you're right about that, but the I will say this. I went on a rant yesterday because I, as a broadcaster, should be able to go to the live feed from the White House whenever I darn well want and be able to run it over my ear without fearing a fine from the same federal government.
Well, now that would be ironic.
Yes.
If you had been fined by the federal government for broadcasting the seat of power of the federal government.
Correct. If something that happened in the White House.
They wouldn't really have the. That would take some chutzpah, as we say.
Yes. Do you think that would be something the Supreme Court would hear? Sullivan versus. U.S. versus Sullivan, that he was broadcasting live audio from the White House and therefore violated a, FCC decency clause by airing a curse word and now. Now he's pushing back.
That would be fantastic. But anyway, I just, look, I mean, Kanye West, and here's the other thing, too. A lot of the things Kanye West was talking about are things that liberals support.
Yeah.
Last time I checked, criminal justice reform, prison reform, urban revitalization, these are things that liberals actually favor. So you would think that the rational argument would be if Kanye can reach Trump and get him to move in the direction that they want to go, wouldn't you chalk that up as a win? Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't. It's like you're going against your own interests just because Trump is now talking about it. I interviewed an immigration expert who had a funny line. He said, "If Trump said it was a good idea to shower daily, Democrats would stop bathing."
There you go.
I mean, it's strange when you go against your own interests just because you don't like the guy in the White House.
There is Brendan Kirby, LifeSet.com, author of Wicked Mobile. People want to reach out to you online. Where do they go?
At Brendan K. Kirby on Twitter. You can go to LifeSet.com to read the politics.
All right, very good. Coming right back, hour number two of Midday Mobile. And Dale Leash from Landyap joins us. We'll talk about the spat du jour, the ongoing spat between the administration and the city council in Mobile. Also, the folks from the Salty Worm Fishing Tournament join me in just a couple minutes. It's all straight ahead right here on Midday Mobile.